Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable for this Monday, the 18th of November. I'm Joe Donahue. In this hour, we'll start off with our panel, Alan Chartak, Mike Spain, and Rosemary Armeo. Later in the broadcast, our JFK series continues with a discussion with legendary newsman Dan Rather, on his days in Dallas. And we'll chat with Jeffrey Sachs on President Kennedy's mission for peace. Joe Sacco will tell us about the Great War. Ian will speak with Bob Smeaton, director of a new documentary on Jimi Hendrix. Plus, Alan will be back in the Congressional Corner. The Roundtable begins after news. Good morning and welcome to our WAMC panel on the Roundtable this morning. And welcome to Monday, too. And what started off in at least some portions of the region to be a dark and stormy day has a lot of sun and beautiful, and it's quite nice. So,
but it will be windy here.
Yes, that's right. Always. Good morning and welcome. Let me introduce our panel to you. We have a fine panel assembled. WAMC's Alan Chartak is here. Good morning, Alan.
As always, a great day, Joe, because you're in the lead.
Well, aren't you nice? Thank you. Also joining us, University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. And doing a little bit of musical chairs, normally Libby Post would be with us on Monday. She was unable to join us today, so she will join us tomorrow, but Mike Spain, who would normally join us tomorrow, will join us today. Good
Happy
morning. How are you?
Just fine. Happy to be here.
Thank you very much for moving things around and for being with us. I appreciate it. Always good to have you with us. Let us start with, I guess we can talk a little bit about the deadly storms and about about weather, because there were two interesting things. Obviously, the deadly tornadoes that hit the U.S. Midwest states yesterday, I think probably most people became... Not most. Many people became aware of it through the prolonged postponement of the Chicago Bears game.
Right. For an hour. Yeah,
More than an hour. Almost 2 hours.
Almost
where they
hours,
evacuated
yeah.
the stadium and took everybody out of Soldier Field
in
Chicago because they were worried about the tornadoes and horrible tornadoes in Illinois, Indiana, and Kentucky. And we can couple this with the story that was on the front page of the New York Times yesterday about the climate crisis, if you want, which talks about the growing clamor over inequities of climate crisis, and talking about the madness and even making this kind of an economic issue. And I thought a fascinating article in the New York Times yesterday.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it sort of pits rich nations against poor nations, where the poor nations are blaming the developed countries for causing the pollution that is now coming down and heavy on these poor countries in the form of natural disasters.
And having these developing countries demanding some compensation mm-hmm. from the worst polluting countries for the damage that they say that they're already suffering from.
And what a different view we get from our own Congress, where these statesmen from the poor countries are saying we are facing catastrophe like we have never, the human race has never faced before, which is whole populations could be dislocated by rising sea levels and devastation like we're seeing in the Philippines.
You know, Joe mentions the New York Times, and I have to tell you, I read it avidly in the middle of the night most of the time when I get up for that hour when one doesn't sleep. And there are this whole host of things. Somebody else will have to connect the dots, because otherwise I'll seem crazy. But we have.
So I'm sorry. So this is on us now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, somebody else
all
will
right.
have to. But you read in the Times one day there's a huge article about how there are all these green worlds that are basically capable of supporting life. Earth-like things.
Planets and other solar systems.
When are we hearing this? Now. Okay. then, I have always... So then we hear about this the global warming crisis again and again. Was Al Gore in An Inconvenient Truth told us all about it? He got a Nobel Prize for it. But now it's all happening exactly as it's been, as he suggested it was going to happen. And I happen to believe that the scientific community knows what it's doing and has talked about global warming. But as Rosemary just said, there are, I don't know that you want to use the word statesmen for the people in the Congress. I don't think you meant.
No, I meant statements to the other countries.
I thought you were being sharp and basically saying the great statesmen in the U.S. Congress putting this together. And I've always thought that when it's all over, we're going to discover that in the endlessness of space, we are nothing more than a microbe. Right, we're nothing more than a microbe. That's always been my.
But it's our microbe.
Yeah,
and we're going to destroy it if we don't do something to deal with this.
If we can, we should, and it's obvious that we should. And there is this inequity, but boy, I'll tell you, it's getting scarier and scarier and scarier.
It is 65 tornadoes through the Midwest.
Yeah,
I mean. And then the disclaimer, of course, which is that it's hard to connect any single weather event with climate changing. single event?
Well, in one sense, the number of events may not have changed dramatically, but the intensity of events seems to be changing.
Yeah.
You know,
and the amount of damage.
Right. And that's redefining things. But getting back to what you were talking about, Alan, if countries are now making, I guess, liability claims against other countries. So underdeveloped countries that are victimized by these horrible storms are going against the developed countries like the U.S. and China and countries in Europe and saying your pollution is causing the climate change that's damaging our country and you owe us money. Is that going to further the discussion, or is that going to, you know, force people into corners and delay any real action? I mean, that's the difficulty here.
My sense of this thing is that we really know we can do some things now. We can do some things now.
It's pastime to act. Some people would say.
That's right.
Would say,
right. And we, but it may be too late. But we should do it, and we should do it fast. Because, you know, my time is limited, but my kids are having kids. And you know, what kind of civilization puts its head in the sand, ostrich-like, and says, okay, so let's assume for a second that the deniers are right, that it has nothing to do with anything. At least you take the available science and you do something with it. Mm-hmm. That seems to me to be the answer.
Well, there are some people who say it's definitely happening, whether human action is the cause, that they would dispute. Okay, fine. I think that's dumb, but okay, fine. You still have to do something about it. The people of Bangladesh will not have a country someday very soon. The people of the Maldives will not have a country pretty soon. Kenya is it's becoming all desert. How do you support the people who are there?
Right.
And whether or not the United States and Western Europe takes blame for this, they certainly are going to have to deal with it, or they're going to stand by and watch millions of people die. Is that what we're going to do?
And it looks in this article, there's two points at stake. One, of course, is the exactly what you're talking about. What are we going to do? I mean, there's the compensation issue. They want compensation.
Right.
I mean, okay. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you love to say, okay, that'd be great, and we would make good on it. But it would seem to me, isn't it enough just to kind of address the problem and take care of it for the future.
Just as soon as we take care of all those people who are the descendants of slaves, then we'll take care of all the people who are going to be hurt by global warming.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not.
Yeah, it's just it's a great and symbolic and important.
I'm not
speech, but
right. I'm not certainly belittling it by any stretch, but it does the way it reads in the New York Times. While they have no legal means to seek compensation, they have demanded concrete efforts to address the loss and damage that the most vulnerable nations will almost certainly face, the result of fragile environments and structures and limited resources to respond. The sheer magnitude and complexity of the issue makes such compensation unlikely. The notion of seeking justice for a global catastrophe that affects almost every country with enormous implications for economic development is not only immensely complicated but also politically daunting. And certainly that is the case. But then you look at the next step and say, okay, but what can we do about the future? That seems where we're at.
It's just one of these hard
things
issues.
Are happening that are positive. I mean, you know, you can take isolated events like the development of the battery-powered car and alternatives to highly polluting fuels to less polluting fuels. Using instead of coal, using gas, which is still polluting, or using wind power or using solar power, which are even better. I mean, that is growing. It's becoming economically more feasible. Science is really making strides there. It's possible that there could be significant scientific gains in these areas, and the non-polluting sources of power may clear the air, so to speak.
This is what journalists do. You know, we have to leave people upbeat. And I mean, that's all very nice, Mike, but it's all immediately obliterated by the fact that China's getting more money and therefore they're using more oil. They're totally exploiting Africa in order to get oil to do what we did in our industrial age. And the fact of the matter is that this is a huge issue that requires global cooperation. We can't even cooperate not to have war. I mean, UN, this should be the only thing the UN is doing right now is global warming.
You know, two things come to mind. One is World War II, when we had to. We dropped everything, and we did what we had to do.
Right.
Okay. Then there was the Marshall Plan after World War II, and we did what we had to do there.
But that was only Americans. I mean, we didn't, Americans. We didn't have to get other people involved.
You're right. But at least we did what we had to do and dropped everything in order to do it. And I think that is the case now. This is really a very sensitive and important time. And while I love Mike's participation and what he said, it's going rather slowly. And I mean, where I live, I'll tell you who has the Priuses. Usually, the people who have a little bit more money. You know, and the people who don't have to drive the clunkers, and they have no choice, and I don't blame them. Nevertheless, it's coming very slowly.
Well, you're right. It's not nearly at the pace that pollution is happening, and industrialization continues, and dirty industrialization continues, like in China, like you said. But what I'm saying is, we do have the scientific means to mitigate this.
Yes, we do.
And we don't have the single-mindedness that we had during World War II or the Marshall Plan after World War II. And that's what seems to be the problem.
Right. And what more does it take?
We don't have money and we don't have political will.
So global emissions continue to rise. A report this month by the United Nations Environmental Program warned that immediate action must be taken. Immediate action must be taken to reduce emissions enough to limit the rise in average global temperatures to 2 degrees Celsius or 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit above pre-industrial levels. That is the maximum warming that many scientists believe can occur without causing potentially catastrophic climate change.
Yeah, scary stuff.
But what made us go fight the Japanese and the Germans in the Second World War, what made us do it? We thought that they were going to kill us if we didn't do it.
They were going to destroy our way of life.
See, that's right. So let's, and kill some of us, Michael. Mm-hmm. What in the world do we think what Joe just said is not the same thing, if not worse?
Well, there's a certain sense of hopelessness when it comes to environmental issues, like the hole in the ozone level. Like, that's scary. That scares me. And yet, what can I do? Okay, I stopped using hairspray. Not enough. I think global warming is like that. People want to do something, but what can they do?
Yeah, symbolic steps. But getting everyone into a room and discussing what they're going to do is next to impossible. Yep. Getting anybody to agree, and forgive me if I'm misspeaking, but I think the last major summits, we didn't even show up, did we?
So,
Kyoto.
I mean,
we're not even on board.
You know, that to me is a statement in and of itself.
Sure.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue with more topics. We always welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. And we welcome your comments as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Oh,
You know, it's the holidays.
We're too, Chief.
Families are bickering and fighting, okay. And now they're doing it on Facebook. The Cheney sisters, this is a sad story. So,
you think so? Think it's sad?
Yes, I think it's horribly sad whenever there's discord in a family. Okay, so of course the vice president,
even in the Cheney family,
former vice president of the United States, Dick Cheney, is working very hard on behalf of his daughter, Liz, who is running for Senate in Wyoming,
okay. Trying to take out another Republican senator in a primary, right, who is, right. So and she is playing the role of the sort of Tea Party type right-winger.
That's right. And so to play that type to the hilt, she goes on Fox News Sunday. Right. And they ask her about the issue of same-sex marriage. And because, of course, her sister, Mary, who they have once described as we are as close as sisters can be, she said they asked her about her thoughts on the issue. And her sister has a part is married.
Married.
Is married.
Sure.
Married.
And they have two children.
And Liz said this is an area where we disagree. So Mary is watching and gets ticked off. And she goes on her Facebook page and she says, Liz, this isn't just an issue on which we disagree. You're just wrong and on the wrong side of history. And then her wife, Mary's wife, Heather Poe, went further, touching on Liz Cheney's relocation from Northern Virginia to Wyoming to seek
recent
office.
Recent relocation.
Because she is already battling accusations of carpet-bagging the race, mm-hmm. and saying, I can't help but wonder how Liz would feel if, as she moved from state to state, she discovered that her family was protected in one but not the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes.
Well, that is a very, very public...
It's kind of sad.
Slapping. I see.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's very unfortunate that, you know, a family dispute sort of erupts like this. But she kind of put herself in this position by very publicly disagreeing with her sister's, marriage and gay marriage and marriage equality in general, and probably opened herself up.
I find it really interesting that the sisters couldn't work it out, yeah. when the father, who Dick Cheney, like him or not, was put in a really awful position considering his own public views and professional views about homosexuality, and he managed to be both loyal to his daughter and to kind of move away, but in a non-hurtful way politically. He handled it well, and yet she has not. Liz has not handled it well. I think this speaks to her political prowess,
well,
actually.
Exactly. I mean, the point really here is she's running as the right-wing candidate in the election. So,
isn't the first thing you say is, I support my sister? And then while I have issues with this,
the first thing you say is I love my sister.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it seems to me that's the first thing you say.
And my nieces and their partner.
And exactly what Dick
Cheney did
and his wife.
Yes.
And Lynn.
Yes.
Well, then, listen, I couldn't agree with you more. But what happens if she does that? Remember that her political posture here is as the person who is trying to out the, quote, moderate rhino, Republican in name only, person. And how does that advance her in this close race trying to unseat the incumbent?
Yeah, I think you have a point here, Alan, but even teabaggers, even the most conservative people have in their family and love gay people.
By the way, you know where I stand on this issue. So, but I was just fascinated by a term you just used. I just want to make sure that I understood it correctly. Is that something you made up, or is it something?
What did I say?
Teabaggers
instead of
Tea Party. Yeah, Tea Party.
It's a
Tea Party members.
Oh my gosh.
A teabagger.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
I like it myself, but
yes,
no, I mean it's a derogatory.
Yes, it was quite a
sensory.
So let's say
I'm blushing.
Let's say that this Cheney candidate is elected back in Wyoming. could she then moderate her position? You know, I mean, isn't that what really happens during elections? You swing to the right, you get elected, and then you come back.
Yeah.
You know, and that's probably what
but
she's
then
trying
you,
to do.
Yes,
then, you look like a hypocrite.
Right, and then you've ticked off your family
about
in
that.
The process.
But I don't know about that. You take a look at our United States senator, who, when she was representing an upstate district,
that's right,
was tough on gun. It was pro-gun,
right.
And
there was an evolution,
anti-gay-ish, and that's right. Schumer said. Schumer said she'll evolve, and
that's
she
right,
did.
That's right.
And nobody has ever held that against her.
Well, the president has said that he evolved on this very issue of gay
yes,
marriage.
Yes, sure.
I mean, he made that very clear.
And people like Dick Cheney made that possible too.
But the question, which I think is one of the interesting parts of the press coverage about this, is that ultimately, sure, it reveals tensions within the Cheney family, but it also obviously reveals the tensions within the Republican Party.
Sure.
And how do they get over that? Because it's a perfect crystallization of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, silence.
Yeah, all right. Well, I just silenced the group.
Let the people in Radio Land know that all three panelists, other than Joe, are shaking their hands saying, yep, that's right, but nobody's saying anything.
and we should say that Liz Cheney declined to comment further on this after her sister and her partner and her wife went after.
Which was not.
I mean, not really went after. But
well, the question is, does that
publicly
concern,
disagree
does that help,
with her?
Does that help her?
Yeah, you know, you make a good point, Alan. You know, if it was orchestrated, what's the best way that I can win votes back home in Wyoming, which is a fairly conservative state? And if I publicly state my disagreement with my sister's marriage to her same-sex partner, will that help me? And then if the sister comes out and criticizes me, will that help me more? Maybe it's all a devious plan.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't want to think.
It's messy.
I don't want to think.
I think it's a genuine dispute.
Wait a second. What do you mean you don't want to think like that? What are you, goody two-shoes? I mean, what is that
I
about?
I don't want to think that it's that
that's the way
calculated.
People argue.
Yeah.
I want to think that, you know, I would hope that that's indeed her position as opposed to... You know.
I have four sisters, and I have to say that we don't have to calculate or plan our annoyances with each other.
Right.
It just kind of pops out.
What are some of them?
Oh, with my sisters?
Yeah.
Over, for example, one of them is a journalist, so we disagree about whether newspapers and other publications should cover multiple births. Like there's some big joyous celebration. I don't believe in covering it.
She As does. A twin, I resent that.
Twins are not multiple births.
No,
these
we're
are sextuplets.
Super twins. Seven, eight,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually twins are.
Well,
it,
you're right.
Yes,
okay,
it
technically,
multiple.
But that's not.
Well, which sister is Lewis. In agreement with Alan here?
Her twin sister, oddly enough.
And you know what to buy mom, and you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But you don't take to Facebook. You don't take to your column.
Do
you don't take to your.
No, it's actually more the opposite, you know, that despite the disagreements between us, when I, for example, got into trouble, my sister was extremely vocal on Facebook and elsewhere in my defense.
Yeah.
For which I said, I can never be mean to you again. She reminds me of that all the time whenever I start.
Whenever you're mean to
whenever
you're
yeah. trying, yeah. You're leaning that way.
And it just seems that you know, the discussion that we have, and we've talked about it, Alan says this all the time, is that the reason that we as a culture and a society have evolved on this issue is because we have so many
right.
people
that
it becomes a family issue. So here you have a family issue and you're still toeing the party line. You know, you're not
yeah, sure.
you're not evolving.
What? How unique this family is, though, that the political aspect of the debate is so important. That's not true in most families.
But also about how instrumental her father has been
that's
in
exactly.
this race.
Where I wanted.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I was no big fan of Dick Cheney when he was the vice president, and many people thought he was running the government, and it was extraordinarily powerful for that figure. But it's funny what history will do and what contemporary circumstances would do. All of a sudden, this guy is looking nice. I mean, he's looking
reasonable.
Well,
yeah.
Reasonable.
Yeah.
I never really thought he looked nice or reasonable, but he always did defend his daughter. And you got to like that. He shoots his friend in the face, but he defends his daughter. That's a good thing.
Well, wait a second.
You're never going to get beyond
second.
That, are
Wait
you?
A second. Wait a second. He did not shoot the friend in the face on purpose.
I didn't say he shot him on purpose, no, but
it's a good line.
It is a great line, yeah.
And on that note, let's take a break. We'll be back. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Monday. And I don't, if anyone heard Morning Edition this morning, I thought the Cokie Roberts piece was really great this morning about her recollections of JFK. Of this, of course, is the 50th anniversary week, the actual anniversary on Friday, the 22nd, of the assassination of the president. And a great, great article in the Times Union by Paul Grondahl about memories of JFK coming to this region for campaign events.
Yeah, this is what I like about this story. What's so neat is rather than focusing on the event of November 22nd, 1963, we sort of explain maybe some of the anguish that Americans had by looking at his visit, the only visit to the Capital Region, which was on September 29th, 1960. And Alan, you you can weigh in on this as a political scientist. You know, that was when Rockefeller was governor. He had ousted 2 years earlier. He had ousted Averell Harriman. Republicans did have a lot of clout in New York, and Kennedy needed to come here because he needed New York to win the election.
Yeah, New York was a much more balanced state than it is now. It has increasingly become blue. Since that time. But, you know, half the state was Republican. No two ways about it.
And that's why he was upstate. He actually came in late at night and spent the night in Albany. And when he, you know, came out during the day, he, as the story goes, he went and paid homage to Dan O'Connell, the big Albany County political boss who ran the machine. And then he got in a car with Congressman Leo O'Brien of Albany and Erastus Corning, the mayor of Albany, and they drove through downtown. The crowds were enormous. Then they went off to Troy, and in Monument Square in downtown Troy, it was just a mob scene. And, you know, thousands of people were gathered trying to break their way through the crowd to shake hands with him. And, you know, and Paul Grondahl was able to talk to a couple of people, you know, who, you know, like people who now are in their 70s or 60s who cut school and went down, and others who, like our former assemblyman Jack McEnany, said he couldn't get out of school. He was in school and they wouldn't let him leave.
And he's still bitter about it.
and he wished he had. I grew up in Troy, and I wished that I had gotten out. I was only in third grade, and my mother said, "Oh, you'll get another chance," which, of course, we never did.
But what was great about the pictures was there he was in this open car in Albany and in Troy, and one had to think about what could have been that happened in Dallas. So that's fascinating.
They were extraordinarily vulnerable, but people were just, they loved the senator or the Massachusetts senator, and they were mobbing to see him. And even after that, he went to Schenectady. He got alongside Sam Stratton, the congressman from Schenectady, whose son is Brian Stratton, who was the mayor of Schenectady after Sam Stratton was mayor of Schenectady many years later, and now he heads the Canal Corp. And, you know, he has memories from his family talking about that day, but he was too young to go. He doesn't remember anyway. He was three. And then, Paul, the amazing thing is he went to Amsterdam. I mean, the presidential, when have you heard a presidential candidate coming to Amsterdam, New York? You know, so he was out to get the votes. He was very popular. And one of the trouble with a newspaper story is it has to have an end. And Paul said one of the guys he talked to went down the day after Kennedy was here and Nixon was in town, and, you know, there just wasn't that much of a crowd.
Did Paul have any impression of the role of religion played in all of this?
Well, he didn't address that in his story, but this is an Irish Catholic community, and having an Irish Catholic senator, and this was prior to the issues that came out after his death about maybe perhaps not adhering to all the, you know, the rules.
The
tenets of Catholicism.
I don't think it would have made a difference, tell you the truth.
No, I think people are very forgiving, and they loved him. It is interesting, though, how there was just a story the other day in the New York Times about how historians have changed their views. Now, history books, like in the late 60s and early 70s, describe President Kennedy as, you know, the young, bright, hopeful president who was struck down in his prime, and there were many great things to come. But now history books kind of, you know, draw him as being more...
left-wing history books do.
Well... they're saying that he, you know, his foreign policy, he might have been, you know, after the Bay of Pigs debacle, he might have exacerbated the situation that got us into trouble with the Cuban Missile Crisis. And, you know, it was during his administration we stepped up our, Vietnam presence. And, you know, but it's all can be debated till the cows come home. When he came to the upstate New York, to the Capital Region in 1960, it was phenomenal. And there are, we were fortunate. We had, the Times Union published a book in 1964 that had hundreds of photos of Kennedy when he was here in 1960, and then a couple of other times he came to the region. He came to West Point while he was president, and he also was in Hyde Park for the funeral and services for Eleanor Roosevelt. But he never came back as president. But he drew enormous crowds, and he was, people who weren't even active in politics. Paul spoke to an old guy who was 92 years old who said, "I never really cared about anything in politics that much," and he kind of got me involved.
You know, Lyndon Johnson was quoted, I don't know if it was the Caro book or where, Joe, you may remember this, as saying, how could he could go into a house in West Virginia and there would be a picture of Christ on one wall and JFK on the other wall. And he said, how are you going to compete about that? And by the way, I don't think that's so much changed. In other words, I think the guy, with all you say, that is right about foreign policy and everything else, is still regarded as a great martyr in this country, and a revolutionary in that he proved you could be Catholic and be a great president.
Well, on a different but related note, I would like the records on the autopsy to finally become public. It's been 50 years.
I heard your interview with the author of the new book, Joe, last week, and some
cruel
of the most
shocking act. Yes.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. What'd you say, Joe?
A cruel and shocking act. Yeah, is the name of the book.
And he spoke during the interview about how the doctor who headed the autopsy threw away all his notes. He threw them in the fireplace on Saturday night
because they were bloodstained.
The 23rd, and he didn't want them to become a spectacle in some museum.
Yeah.
And
it's possible.
It's history. I want to see him.
And the next round of documents is not released, I believe, until 2017.
Yeah. So what is the reason for that?
100 years after Kennedy's birth.
Yeah. Because of national security. That's the reason that they're giving.
Okay. But I'll tell you what did it for me. I've probably said it here before, but I say it again. When Jack Ruby killed Oswald, as far as I was concerned, all bets were off that they would allow this thug to be standing out there in a police station with a gun. That, to me,
security said, really wasn't the level that we have today and know today. And partly because of that. I mean, you know, Bob Schieffer from CBS News tells the story of how he was a young cop reporter for the Dallas Morning News. And he ran into work when he heard about the assassination because he was a night cop reporter. And a phone rang, and it was a woman who wanted a ride. And he says, "Lady, this isn't a taxi company. This is a newspaper, and the president's just been killed." And she said, "I know, my son has been charged."
Oof.
And it was Oswald's mother looking for a ride. And he went to the police station with her. He commandeered a car that the business editor was test driving for a story. It was a big Cadillac, and he interviewed her. Walked into the police station, stayed with her, and then they were about to bring Oswald in to see his mother. And some cop or FBI guy looks at him and said, "Who are you again?" And he says, "I'm Bob Schieffer." He says, "From where?" And he told he's from the newspaper, and he threw him out. But
throw out the reporter, but not
close.
Ruby.
He got that close to being able to be present and interview the accused assassin of President Kennedy.
But we'll hear Dan Rather's take on this in just a few minutes. It's pretty amazing. He was there on the route. Just right after he was at the end of the route, right sort of just past the grassy knoll, and saw the motorcade speed by after the shooting. And that's he'll tell that story in a few minutes. Final, before we go, just because I just wouldn't be a day without talking about healthcare. And this is not
the
so
news
much about
is
healthcare.
Also different.
Yes, absolutely. And so the insurance commissioner for the District of Columbia speaks out about the Affordable Care Act. And the president had his news conference on Thursday, said he would allow thousands of Americans to renew the policies that might not provide the minimum coverage required by the law. And the insurance commissioner, William White,
said that he didn't buy that and didn't think it was a good way to go
because it was going to ruin the program.
Right.
Yes.
And then they fired him.
Which shows you the level of frustration that I would posit exists in the White House right now, and that is just in three very different words. I want to describe it: stupid, stupid, stupid.
Yeah.
So you let the guy say. You let the guy say what he's going to say and say, okay, he disagrees. But instead, you fire him.
Right.
That's awful.
Isn't this a First Amendment right? The government actually took action against him. He works for the government. He was fired for something that he said. Isn't that First Amendment violation?
No, that's done all the time in government.
You work at the pleasure of the...
It's done all the time in government. Are you saying, is it right? No, it's not right. But are you asking me whether
I think it actually is. I think you could make an issue that it's First Amendment.
Nah.
Unless he had terrible evaluations.
Nah.
Listen, Mr. White's office posted the statement on the city's government website less than 15 minutes after sending an email seeking approval. Later, when confronted by the mayor, Mr. White said he had received permission from the mayor's staff, even though he had not. And in an interview, Mr. White said that the deputy mayor told him that the mayor had decided to go in a different direction and that Mr. White's services would no longer be needed.
No.
Well, getting back to the White House, Alan, the book will be written, I'm sure. The story will come out of what it must be like. I mean, this must be kind of tantamount to that period in 1974 before Nixon resigned. About decisions about whether to release documents.
There aren't enough Motrin in the world to have... helped out here.
This
has not increased my respect for the way the administration is handling this whole incident. Bravo for people who speak out when they see things that are wrong.
Yeah, right. But we're getting a spate of letters now from people who think that when we say this kind of thing, that we really don't understand the role of the Republicans and setting up the thing and all the rest of it.
The outcome of what eventually it will do to bring people.
Well, home. I mean, you know, people who are opposed to the Affordable Care Act are piling on and they're getting great mileage out of this.
The government gave them the opportunity for that. Yeah. It's no surprise that the Republicans are waiting for any little thing to go wrong. Wouldn't that make you act to ensure that nothing would go wrong?
Well, now that I got you all riled up,
now
it's time to go.
Cut us off.
But we'll be back tomorrow. My thanks to Mike Spain. Thank you very much, Mike, for coming in. Always
happy
a pleasure.
To be here.
We'll see you next week. Rosemary, see you tomorrow. And Alan, thank you
I
very
love
much.
Love what
as
Rosemary
always.
Just said. Now you cut us off.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.